and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading Dominicana by Angie Cruz. But first, let's talk book news. And this was something I wanted to talk about with you, Annie, because it was an article last week in The Guardian saying that the literary world is going to be overwhelmed by 600 books being released on the 3rd of September. And this was obviously, some have had their releases delayed because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And this was a UK article, so I don't know what the case is here, but one of the interesting aspects of it was that it is overwhelming because there are just so many being released on the same day, and particularly for indie publishers and smaller presses that don't have perhaps the huge marketing budgets, they're worried their books will just be swallowed up in the wash of all these books coming out. But what's your take on it, Annie? Is it the same here? And do you have, you know, what sort of challenges does this present?
Yeah, I think it is probably a similar problem, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Obviously, we get lots of the books that the UK will be publishing at this time. And with the world that we live in, you pretty much have to publish on the same day as the international release, especially for those huge titles.
Yes.
So we will get lots of the major titles. I think what's happened here from a bookselling point of view is that lots of titles that I was buying in kind of March, April, June, May, June, which are quieter months anyway, either got delayed for printing reasons or for publicity reasons. And so they have been pushed back. From the publishers that I've spoken to, I think they've tried to stagger it a bit, because I know the UK always does this Super Thursdays thing where this is the biggest kind of one of the biggest publishing days of the year.
Yeah.
And I think I read in that same article that it's a third increase from last year. So I think last year they had about 400 titles.
They still had a lot.
Yeah, so yeah. It is usually big.
Yeah.
And I guess with the lead into Christmas, you always are going to have a lot of the bigger names coming out.
That's right.
I think, yeah, some of the littler titles will probably get lost. I wonder whether some of those houses would decide to delay their publication dates even further into the new year. But I guess it just depends on readers and what people pick up and love. And I think, I don't know, there's no surefire recipe, you know,
in any
circumstance, but definitely in this circumstance, I think it's always a game of unknowns, bookselling, and you'll never know whether one big author's new book is going to have a hit like the last one or is going to be received slightly less well. I think there are some kind of surer bets, but, you know, there will always be one title that will surprise you. And I think the interesting thing in an Australian context is that because of COVID and worldwide supply chains, this Christmas is going to be really interesting, because we're going to have to print a lot of things here. Publishers will kind of get one print run delivered from the US or the UK, and that's it. And so they have to really stake their claim on what they think they will be able to sell.
So they have to make the choice, really. Yeah, they can't print them all.
No. Well, they can get a kind of initial delivery, but there's only so much money that you can spend, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what immediately runs out and we won't be able to get more of. And so, yes, I would recommend get your Christmas presents early.
Yes.
Is my top tip.
Oh, that's a good point.
And I was also thinking, in context of, I guess, Australia versus the UK, what Christmas shopping is going to look like, you know, that's been my biggest concern. Christmas gets us through the whole year, and if you can't have people in the shop, it's going to be really, really tricky.
And if you can't get stock easily, you can only sell, you know, then it limits what you can sell, doesn't it? But yeah, people in the shop as well, because that would normally be bustly, wouldn't
it? Yeah, exactly. It's bustly, and then everyone sees everyone picking up other books and they think, oh, I should get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's kind of a happy panic that sets in.
And has there been – this was something that came up on another podcast I was listening to, where they said there hasn't been a big book of this year. It might have been Book Riot, where they were talking about, has there been a big breakout book where some years there's a book that – consistently sells and sells.
I think there's been a couple of really consistent sellers. I think a good one for nonfiction will be Rutger Bergman's book, Humankind.
I think I heard, is that a him?
Yes.
Yep. I think I heard him interviewed on Reasons to Be Cheerful.
He did a TED Talk a little while ago, and he was the person at the World Economic Forum who kind of berated all of these economists and wealthy people, being like, trickle-down economics doesn't work. Here's why. And yeah, his new book is about optimism and faith in humanity rather than kind of always looking at the negatives.
Yeah.
So I think people will be keen on that. Phosphorescence, yeah, obviously has been a huge seller for us all year, and I think will be just the easiest gift over Christmas.
Yeah. So Phosphorescence by Julia Baird. Yeah.
And my other top tip for Christmas would be Trent Dalton's new book, All Our Shimmering Skies, which, yes, I'm reading at the moment, an advanced copy, and it's so good. It's, I think, better than The Book Thief. Better than Boy Swallows Universe, and I would put it on Book Thief level.
Because Boy Swallows Universe was that breakout book a couple of years ago, exactly. I think. And that's what I was wondering this year. What is that? Mm. You know, what will it be?
I think it always, as I say, it's impossible to pick it, or, you know, it's hard to pick it because I think it's what captures the imagination. There's so many good books published every year.
Yeah,
and all of them probably deserve to sell. Well, lots of them deserve to sell at that level, but it's what people kind of get behind, and that word of mouth really viral thing kind of happens, and you can't control that.
And that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Fun and terrifying.
Yeah, and terrifying. So on to our book of the week. This is Dominicana by Angie Cruz. So Angie Cruz was born in Washington Heights, New York, and she's got Dominican Republican heritage, and she, growing up, travelled to the Dominican Republic a lot as a child, and she then went on to study art and fashion design, so very creative, and she's also at the moment working on a screenplay for her book Soledad. She's multi-talented, and this is her latest novel, Dominicana. So it's about Anna, who's a 15-year-old Dominican Republican girl, and she is married off to Juan, who's 32. So it's an arranged marriage. He takes her to New York City, and she then is living in the apartment there, a small apartment with him, and she's effectively trapped in the apartment, one, because he discourages her from going out and even doesn't get around to getting her a key, and also she can't speak English. So she's really... When she does go out, it's very scary for her, because if she gets lost, she can't even ask for directions, you know. So,
and New York City compared to her tiny little farming village is a huge shock.
Yeah.
And this is in the 60s.
It's 1960s and based on Angie Cruz's mother's story. Mm. So it's based on real life experience. So Juan goes out to work each day, but then he has to return to the Dominican Republic. And there's a lot of upheaval at that time in and around Santo Domingo, and Juan has to go back and check on their property, and because the aim is he wants to earn enough money that they can buy and invest in property back home where they can build a business there or at least improve the lives of all their family back there. Part of the reason she's been married to him is that he will then help her family as well. So while he's away, she then branches out and takes some English lessons. His brother Cesar is looking after her, so his younger brother is still there in New York, and then Juan returns, and so then we have a decision about how is Anna going to go forward. Is she going to stay? It's a difficult marriage, and she has to make some decisions about that. So it's sort of a coming of age story. It's also an immigrant story, and the uncertainty of that immigrant life, not knowing if you will get that citizenship or if you'll be able to stay, not knowing if you have work from week to week, and trying to make some, you know, build connections and forge some ties in that place. And it's a marriage story. And as I say, it's a difficult marriage, and just the compromises that one makes in a marriage or doesn't make. So this was inspired by Angie Cruz's mother's story. And when she told her mother she was writing it, her mother said, "Why are you writing about that? It's so typical. You know, my story is so typical." And I think Angie Cruz says, well, yes, it is and it isn't. But it, you know, in the sense that it is, it might have been typical, but it hasn't really been told very often in literature. And so Dominicana was the most anticipated book of 2020 in all the publications. So New York Times, Washington Post, Oprah or O Magazine, Time, all of the, you know, newspapers and magazines. It has been shortlisted for the Women's Prize. And so this is the final of the Women's Prize shortlisted books that I have now read. And it was recommended, I think it came onto my radar because it was recommended a few months 6 months ago as an alternative to American Dirt by Janine Cummins, as a more authentic sort of Latin American story, if that's what you're looking for, or if that's something that you're interested in. People were saying, read Dominicana by Angie Cruz, and I hadn't heard of it then. And then it was longlisted and shortlisted for the Women's Prize. And so then I started to sort of add it to the list. And I think you recommended it, Annie. It's had good reviews. New Yorker said it was poignant. Esquire called it sensational. Guardian gave it a mixed review and said it lacks, it has great detail in some areas, but lacks New York City local detail, which I think is interesting. And I wonder if that's because it's not because Angie Cruz doesn't know New York City. She grew up there, but it might be that the character of Anna is kind of inside the apartment for a lot of it. I don't know. But anyhow, what did you think, Annie?
It fell a bit flat for me. I think I liked it. It's an easy, quick read. You know, Anna's a great character. She's really entrepreneurial and resourceful and manages really well in this pretty terrible situation that she's been thrown into, away from her family and alone in a country where she doesn't speak any of the language. She's not got any real valid papers. You know, they've told everyone that she's 19. She almost immediately gets pregnant.
She's very vulnerable.
Totally. Yeah. One obviously doesn't love her.
He's a bully.
He's obsessed with money, which I can kind of understand his situation as well. And I think she goes a long way to try and make him a more sympathetic character than he would otherwise be.
Yes.
And I think there were some really strong passages. I loved the time that we spent in her hometown. I loved that time. I think that had some really beautiful passages about the, you know, the heat and the humidity and the life going on. And then once
and
we got to...
it was very lively.
It was very lively.
That's what that Guardian review was saying, that really came to life.
Yeah, so I kind of really got swept into it. And then as soon as she gets to New York, it becomes really cold. And I think it is a deliberate choice because Anna, her life shrinks. New York isn't the same, doesn't have that same kind of liveliness, or she can't access it.
Yeah.
You know, one keeps her away from basically everyone else, doesn't let her have friends, doesn't let her socialize, doesn't let her really even out of the house. She's not allowed to go to the bodega down the corner. So, yeah, there were lots of things that I admired intellectually, but I think I just didn't feel it. It didn't resonate with me. And thinking about it afterwards, I think it reminded me of An American Marriage when we read that, where I think she wanted to put lots of history and lots of ideas and lots of kind of political positions into it, but it didn't necessarily then resonate as a story. And hearing that it was her mother's story, I would much rather hear her mother's account of it as a biography or as a, you know, more
non-fiction.
Non-fiction, exactly.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yes, similar, but I think I enjoyed it more. Mm. But I'll just set the scene because sometimes this affects how you come to a book. So I had just read Every Fire You Tend by Seema Kagesuz, translated by Nicholas Glastonbury for Women in Translation Month, which I ended up really loving, but it's very esoteric. It's written in the second person.
Okay.
There's hardly any action. It's going back into different sort of Islamic and other religions that I am not familiar with, so that was very challenging, but ended up loving it. But then I read Untold Night and Day by Bay Sewer, translated by Deborah Smith, which is a short book, but
she's Korean, is that?
Yes, a Korean novel. Very disorienting because the ground keeps shifting from under your feet, and the
narrator is really unstable, isn't it?
The protagonist or the narrator is very unstable, and it completely bends your mind, and you just don't quite know. It was one of those books that you actually don't quite know what just happened, or did it happen? Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like a dream, in that way that dreams are, and they slip out from just when you think you've remembered what you dreamt about, it slips away. It's that tantalizing thing. Then I came to Dominicana, where we have
very refreshing.
Anna. We know who she is. Mm-hmm. She stays the same for the whole book. We have Juan. Yes, he's a bloke. We get who he is. They move to New York, and yes, they are in New York.
Yeah.
And like, it just was so in that sense, just setting the scene, when I started reading it and they're in the Dominican Republic in her hometown with her family, and her sister does this and her mum says that, and it's all firmly grounded in a real story and very lively, very engaging. I was like, oh, this is great. Not that I didn't love the other books I'd just been reading, but they were so sort
more of mind-bending.
Mind-bending that this was refreshing for me, just where I had, how I came to it. So I really just was immediately engaged. And as you say, I think that first section is very strong and very sort of buoyant, and you get a real sense of her. You get a sense of her ambivalence, let's call it, towards the marriage, reluctance, and yet her feeling of obligation to her family. So you feel for her. It is all a bit, hyper real. So it's almost something I could imagine on television.
Yeah.
You know, it's slightly like the fact that she then wants to see Gabrielle, who's her schoolboy
friend. When she's a teenager, you know, like, and she's keep forgetting that she's been thrust into this really adult position of having to get married and be the person who's going to lift up their family because her sister has let down the team.
She's sort of got those changeable emotions that teenagers have, and that's sort of, so it is, everything's a bit heightened.
And I think also none of the family realizes what it's going to mean when she goes to New York. They can't imagine themselves there because it's so far outside of their experience so far. So they just think of it as this kind of fantasy land where, you know, her mum keeps saying, well, you know, one will buy you this and one will get you that and you must demand this and this and this.
You have coats, you have perfumes.
Exactly. And Anna is just not a demanding person, for one, and also they're just not wealthy either. You know, they're not rich.
No, it's not the life of luxury that I think Anna's family thought they were sending her into. Anyhow, so I loved just sinking into this story and knowing where I was, I guess, was just really easy, really page turnery. And then the similar to you, when she was in New York, certainly at first I felt like it was plodding along a little bit. It's episodic in style, so it seemed to lack a bit of tension for me. And also because of her life, it is a bit boring because she is trapped in the apartment, so there's not a lot to tell. And so there are interludes where she meets this person or that person, or she has a fight with one, or this, you know, things happen, but it does feel a bit like listing a series of things that happened rather than a story building. So that, a bit like you said, felt a bit flat relative to the beginning. And then I just, it picked up again for me. And what it did was that it was that book that I did want to keep getting back to.
Yeah.
So I was wanting to know what happened, wanting to keep turning the page. So I think it did pick up in energy perhaps, even though some of those scenes when Juan's away didn't feel quite real. They were sort of almost fantasy in a way, but that was also organic to the story and to her being a teenager. It's all heightened. And so I did enjoy it, and it didn't go necessarily where I expected it. It did and it didn't, which we won't spoil, but it didn't tie up neatly, but it wasn't.
I liked her character
grew. I think there was a real character arc, and of course it wasn't perfect, you know, and that, so it rang true. And then what I also liked was that the depiction of the marriage, I think, really felt realistic in the sense that it was not a walk in the park. It was never going to be, but it was a very difficult marriage. And Juan, as you say, was a real bully and could have been so unlikable that you just kind of switch off his character completely. But we don't really see it from his point of view. It's not narrated from his point of view. It's first person in Anna's point of view. But I just felt as if he was trying to do what he thought was the right thing, which was make money for the family. And he was had a real sense of purpose of what he needed to do. He hustled. He was out there working. He had no respect for Anna. And that's partly cultural, partly personality, partly who knows what his conditioning, and also resentment because there was someone else he really did want to be with for lots of reasons.
Yeah. He gets given a depth of character that
I felt as if he was trying to do his best. And
at times,
and often really fails. Certainly fails her. I really thought he was quite a well-rounded character. Mm. And so that made the marriage really interesting.
Mm.
And it makes her decisions and what she will do really interesting.
Mm.
That rang true,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. It's also a different look at the American dream, or I guess it's what the American dream really used to be. I think it's morphed into something else now. You can see why they hustle for money, because the money is going to make the wheels turn for them. And they're coming from such a corrupt, such a broken society in the Dominican Republic that America has kind of created this situation as well, which I think there's a lot of political undertones that I think I perhaps didn't know enough about the history to understand.
Yeah.
You know, there's all of these swirling tensions around Vietnam and civil rights and
what America does in other countries.
Exactly. I think reading it in an American context, you would probably get more out of it. Reading it from an Australian white present day context, I think it was my fault that I was slightly shut out of it.
Mm. So yes, so now Women's Prize, Annie, it's being announced, I think, around the 9th of September.
Mm.
We've now read between us all of the shortlisted books. So there's Weather by Jenny Offal. This is in no particular order. The Mirror and the Light by Hilary Mantel. Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. A Thousand Ships by Natalie Haynes, Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell, and Dominicana by Angie Cruz. Your tip, I think I know.
I loved Hamnet so much. And I'm really upset that it's not on the book along list. So I think that's got to be my pick. What is yours?
I don't know.
I think I know what your heart wants.
I don't know. So I think Dominicana isn't quite strong enough compared to the others, but I think it's a good women's prize, certainly shortlist book, because it's accessible and it raises all these issues and it's a great story. Mm. But so out of the others, The Mirror and the Light, I think it was too much of a slog.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, the last 100 pages, you would almost...
Yeah, read the whole book just for that.
Just for that.
I mean, Girl, Woman, Other, I loved that too, thinking about it now. But I mean, that did win the Booker last year, so I don't know how many prizes.
How does that factor in? Can they even factor that in or not? Weather, which is
something that
you forget about. List. That was such a strong book. Mm. But is it almost too much of a skeleton that's got the opposite problem to The Mirror and the Light? I think Hamnet is a really good chance.
Yeah.
But I loved A Thousand Ships, so I would love to see that win, just because I think it was such a women-centered book.
And a bit of an underrated book as
really
well.
Underrated.
I think it went under the radar a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas the other ones have all had a bit
and
of
so strong, just so much bringing the women to the fore, but in very fun, interesting ways, not trying to contrive women to have interesting stories, but really bringing the already dramatic stories to light in a really entertaining read. Yeah, it's so rich. So I loved A Thousand Ships.
So basically we're hedging our bets.
I think we're hedging our bets. So I don't think Dominican. So I think it would be out of Girl, Woman, Other or Hamnet would be the two that I would put my money on, I suppose. Yeah. And then A Thousand Ships would be a delight
really happy surprise.
If that won. But if Weather won equally, I wouldn't be surprised, you know.
Yeah.
If Mirror and the Light won,
list.
I would be surprised just because it is.
I wouldn't, because it's a British prize and I think they love reading about their own history, even 1,000 pages.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But I think she's probably a stronger contender for the Booker.
One of the elements of the prize is being accessible.
And being a woman's, like a representation of women, which, you know.
It isn't.
It's not really. No.
So, no, I think that's not going to win.
Okay.
So Hamnet or Girl, Woman, Other with our possibility of A Thousand Ships.
Yeah.
That's my prediction. We've really hedged our bets.
Yes, we have.
All right. Well, that's it from us. And next week we will be reading something.
Something.
You will
Wonderful.
Be reading something. Amanda and I will be reading A Room Made of Leaves by Kate Grenville.
I think we're reading Sisters by Daisy Johnson, which just came out yesterday.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I've been looking for it. I've been waiting. So Sisters by Daisy Johnson, I can't wait to pick up. And Amanda and I are also reading Summer by Ali Smith, which is also exciting. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at A Bailey Karras. And Annie?
And I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Litzy at Mr. _Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye.